Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Art of Living radio show with me, Victoria Mary Clark. And today I'm talking to a lady who I've been trying to persuade to come on this show for how long? About 2 years now? 3 years? And her name is Kathy Pearson. Welcome, Kathy.
Hi, Victoria.
And the reason I've wanted Kathy on the show is because, Kathy, you are living the dream, really. You're living it kind of like what most people imagine they would do if they won the lottery. You spend most of your life in Thailand, in a beautiful little place beside the beach, and you do yoga, and you eat, like, fresh fruit, and, you know, you got all your mates. Mm-hmm. It's like a perfect life, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been living like that for about 14 or 15 years now.
Wow.
And I spend about 5 months a year in Asia, and then usually 6 or 7 months here, depending on how work goes with everything. But yeah, I've been doing that for a really long time now, so it's just what I do. It doesn't seem
like
an unusual thing, but I suppose I started living like that because I got really into yoga some time back, about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't really a whole lot of that happening here in Ireland at the time, and I wanted to learn more and study more and meet other people that were interested in that, and it was quite new and beginning here. So in Asia, Thailand, India and Bali, places like that, it was much more accessible. So
how did you get into yoga?
How did I get into yoga?
Because you are now one of the best yoga teachers this country has ever produced.
Oh, why, thank you.
Thank you.
How did I get into yoga? I was about 19 or 20, and I'd finished university, and I was living away in Brussels and Amsterdam, and I started to just get really unhappy, and there was no rhyme or reason for it. There wasn't any incident or any great loss or anything that started making me feel that way, but I just started to feel down and depressed. And I came back to Ireland and I told my mum. And my mum was a little bit concerned. And like all 19-year-olds, I thought I kind of had it cracked and had the answer to everything and just thought that I could probably just do it with some pills and I'd be fine.
Right.
And my mum had a great friend who was a psychiatrist in Ireland. He's still practicing. It's Dr. Ivor Brown. And she sent me, he was a family friend, so he came over to the house to see me. And when we met, he took out, I was really expecting to get lots of attention and get told what was wrong with me and have an ailment and something that needed fixing. And he took out a tin whistle and started playing, which really disarmed me and I just really confused me at the time. And he said, "So I believe there's a problem. Your mother tells me you're not so happy. What's wrong?" And I said, "Oh no, nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. I think I just have, you know, some brain chemistry issues." And like being 19 and thinking I knew everything. And so we talked for about 5 minutes and he said, "You know that you're not your mind. You know that you're greater than your mind." And I tried to understand what he was talking about, but it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But I knew there was some truth in what he said. So he asked me, did I know how to meditate?
Mm.
And I didn't really even know what that was at the time. I'd never grown up around that or had any exposure to that. So I told him no. And he said, "There's nothing wrong with you, Kathy. I just want you to come and learn how to meditate." So After that, I went to his house every day, once a week,
mm-hmm.
for a couple of weeks, maybe 6 or 8 weeks. And he taught me how to meditate. And he basically gave me a routine that every morning I would set an alarm and for 30, 40 minutes, I would just practice by myself. And at the end of the 6 or 8 week period, he basically said, "Right, you're off, you know, off you go and just do this yourself." And I was 19, so I didn't have a lot of other 19-year-old friends who were doing this.
No.
And I really started to learn how to observe my mind.
And did you find that easy?
I was just really fascinated by it straight away. So I didn't have any resistance or rebelliousness towards it. I just was really curious. And I really thought he was really cool.
Right. That would help.
Yeah. So I admired him and I looked up to him. And,
yeah.
And so I just tried it. And I started to notice that everything that I was thinking, that I'd identified with, that was me, like my thoughts, that there was somebody watching the thoughts, that there was somebody observing all these thoughts and all this activity of the mind. And he would ask me some pretty deep questions like, "Well, if you're not those thoughts, then who's observing those thoughts?" So And I guess this is what all the great spiritual teachers are asking the questions to their students. So I started to think about that and reflect on it, and I got really, really into it and realized that, you know, my mind gets really, really busy and it can create all sorts of anxiety and frustration and maybe even pain. But if I learn how to slow all that down and control my mind and just observe it, then actually there's no problem. So it's like learning how to not make a problem out of stuff, not make a problem out of things. So that was the start of it when I was, I guess, 19 or 20. And then I hadn't really learned anything about yoga, asana. Mostly the yoga that we see in the Western world now is asana.
Yeah.
So then I went to India when I was about 22 and started practicing yoga over there, which was loads of fun. But then I got into that traveling lifestyle. You know, I would go there for a couple of months and meet people from all over the world, all ages, shapes and sizes, and just really fascinating people that I'd never been exposed to. So I got into that circuit, you know, and I'd go back every year and I'd see the same people. And then a couple of years of doing that, I ended up in Thailand. And Thailand was just so clean and so friendly, and there was no threat, and there was, you know, compared to India where you have to really battle your way through things sometimes, a lot of poverty, a lot of dirt, Thailand was just pristine beaches, amazing clean food, you never get sick. So, and I landed on one
and cheap at that time. Really
at
cheap.
That time.
Yeah, not so cheap now.
Not so cheap now, but at that time it really was. And so I ended up on the island of Koh Phangan, and I first went to the full moon party, like all people in their 20s, and a hedonistic, debaucherous couple of days, which I really even then found kind of boring and dull, and I wasn't really into it. And I had gone there to seek out yoga and like to be surrounded by nature. And then I found someone who became a really great friend of mine for years. His name was Randall O'Leary, and he's an American yoga teacher. So I hung out with him in this amazing place called The Sanctuary.
Which is run by an Irish guy.
Which is managed by an Irish guy.
Oh, I thought he owned it.
Yeah, he's part owner. His name is
Michael
Doyle.
And he's from the west of Ireland.
He's from Wexford, but he hasn't lived in Ireland in a long time, over 20 years.
I just thought it was interesting that there was this Irish guy running a yoga retreat in Thailand.
Yeah. So that was a really amazing place, and I spent years there. And for the first number of years I was a student, and then over a while I graduated from all of that and became a teacher there. And I work now part of the year in a healing center that they have called the Tea Temple, where I do healing sessions in a process called transforming cellular memory, which is a really powerful way of clearing out the body from our conditioning and patterning and everything that's keeping us from really expanding and being our full potential and being happy, I guess, to put it simply. And I teach yoga there too, and I practice yoga there, and I live in nature. I've built a little
You have a house in the jungle.
I have a house in the jungle up a hill overlooking two beautiful beaches. And
so what is that like? I mean, it must present, because obviously, you know, you think, oh, that'd be so lovely, a tropical jungle. But then when you watch those programs like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here or The Island with Bear Grylls,
Survivor,
you can see that like jungle living presents a lot of challenges that we don't have here, like for instance mosquitoes and snakes and, you know, stuff like that, things that can bite you or
creepy crawlies,
things that make you sick. We don't really have those in Ireland, do we?
No. I had one friend come and visit me, and it was really hot, we were down in the beach, and she's like, oh, can we just go up to your house now, I really need to sit in some air conditioning. And I thought, I think you've got a different picture of what my house is like.
Yeah.
So my house is basically made of wood and bamboo and palm with some concrete foundations. There's no walls. There's two walls, but they're on wheels to roll back so I get a view of the beaches.
So there's no actual... You can't really lock your house, can you?
No, there's no need to lock my house. I never, ever lock the house unless I'm going away for like a chunk of time. It's completely safe. So the only thing that comes in are things with more than two legs.
Right.
Or things with no legs, like snakes.
Right.
But, so I built that house about 7 years ago. And sometimes people ask me, oh, can I rent your house or can I go and stay? And I just know by the person, there's no way you would, like,
survive,
really be comfortable in that house. Because you're an urban city person who likes the comforts of city life. Like air conditioning or having a refrigerator or...
Yeah, because like we in Ireland, obviously we like the idea of warm weather, but I think that most of us, when we get it, we find it kind of uncomfortable because we're just not used to it.
Yeah, I mean, I find it more uncomfortable being cold. So I'm used to it. I've acclimatized to it. But yeah, no, there's things to get used to. Like,
do you have to wear sunscreen all the time?
I am a promoter of being safe in the sun, but I generally just don't lie out in the sun.
Right.
So I wear a little bit of sunscreen, but I just don't like putting too much toxic stuff on my skin. But still, kids, wear sunscreen.
Wear sunscreen. And what about mosquito repellent?
I'm there so long now that mosquitoes are like not interested in me, and I often wondered why Asian people don't get bitten by mosquitoes, that it's all the whiteys that seem to get all the bites. But I think you just like you acclimatize, and if I get a little mosquito bite, it itches for a couple of seconds and then it goes, so I'm lucky like that. But most people I know who've spent a long time there, that's what happens. Your body just adapts, or you build some sort of immunity that when you get bitten they don't really bother you. So I'm lucky it's not a problem for me.
And do you think that if you weren't working, you know, because that's another dream that people have, is like to not have to work. But I can imagine that you get bored after 2 weeks of not working. So do you think you would get bored if you weren't teaching? And
well, I think it depends what you term work, like how you view the concept of work.
Mm.
If work is something that's like drudgery to you and you're looking at the calendar or the clock and you just can't wait till Friday, till the weekend comes, that's a whole different concept than work. And I think we need to, as a collective, as people in general, we need to look at what it is that we're creating in our work. And if you're working at something that you love to do, and if you can manage to make a living out of what you love, then it doesn't really feel like work. It feels like something you're looking forward to going into doing. So that doesn't happen overnight. That took me some years to be able to kind of craft that and be able to turn my life into work. One of my friends calls it creating a holiday lifestyle.
Yeah.
So that people say, oh, you're on holiday, oh, for 5 months in Asia. But actually, I'm working there, but it doesn't feel like, oh, I gotta go to work now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just part of the whole way of living, or as you call the show, the art of living.
The art of living.
Yeah, so it's just finding a way to discover what it is that you love doing and then find a way to make a living out of it. And it takes a certain amount of creativity and letting go of certain securities and just going for it.
I think a lot of people would be interested in that. We're going to take a quick music break and we'll be back to talk more about living a holiday lifestyle. Welcome back to The Art of Living with me, Victoria Mary Clark. And today I'm talking with Kathy Pearson and we are talking about creating a holiday lifestyle, because Kathy spends half her life in Thailand and the other half here. And you also have an extremely glamorous life when you're here because you work in film. So it's like people are just going to want to kill you, aren't they?
I hope not.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I do. I've been working in the film business here in Ireland.
Although I suppose we should throw in that you're the daughter of Noel Pearson.
Oh, yes, that's true. So I did grow up in that. And
in the film business.
Sort of second nature to me because I grew up in that environment.
So you're not fazed by movie stars and Oscars and all that shit?
I don't have
phase you. You don't get. You're not all starstruck at all, are you?
I don't have a whole lot to do with movie stars. Mostly, I've been working in the area of location management. So I would go out and I would find locations for various films or TV commercials, sometimes TV shows, and you know, set that up for production. I've also been working as a director of documentaries.
You made an incredible documentary.
I made a feature documentary, a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, called Get the Picture. And that was great. It was all about how photojournalism has covered war in the 20th century.
Mm.
So I got to show that at the Dublin Film Festival, and it won, which is one best Irish documentary, which is great. And I did a whole festival circuit with that, so that was really fun. I got to travel again, which is one of my passions.
You like doing?
So yeah, I do that too, as well as teach a lot of yoga.
So you have a particularly—I mean, that is a really exotic lifestyle you've created.
It's an unusual combination because the film business can be really, really demanding and stressful, and you know, challenging and difficult and rewarding as well because you work with a lot of really creative people. And in the yoga world, I suppose, and working in as a healer, the yoga world is not stressful. The whole idea is that you're helping people unravel all that stress. Yet, on the other hand, it's still a business. There's still a business element. You have to let people know, you know, that you're available for work and that.
You can't just like put up a sign somewhere and go, "Here I am teaching yoga." People need to know
you're
there.
Well, you can a little bit. Can you? That does work to a degree. You can a little bit. I have a few signs up.
You've got a lot of followers though, haven't you? I mean, you've got built up a dedicated following.
I suppose I've been teaching here for nearly 10 years in Dublin, mostly. Mm. And I was teaching for a long time in Samadhi Yoga in Temple Bar, and I still do things there. And I also have my own practice now on Bagot Street in Dublin too. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6:30 each day. And I do private sessions for various different agencies and for people, for individuals. So yeah, you can put up a sign, but generally,
but you have to be good as well.
It takes time, you know. It takes time to teaching yoga for me has really been about building relationships with people. A lot of the whole yoga scene in the world now has come into this whole idea of drop-in classes. So as a student, you might go to one class and in a yoga studio, maybe go to 3 or 4 in a month, and never go to the same teacher twice.
Mm.
And that's fine, you know. You're probably going to get a bit of a workout, but if you stay and work with a teacher consistently over months, or even better, consistently over years, they really get to know you. And then as a teacher, we can help you. We can help you with any physical ailments. We can help you with, you know, more of the deeper ailments, mental and emotional. But it takes time, you know. So I've been lucky in that a lot of the students I work with, I've known now for a really long time. I still get new people, which is always great because it's nice to have new faces come in the door. But yeah, the more I get to see people, the more kind of depth we can get into with the practice.
So the yogic lifestyle, what does it mean? Does that mean that you don't, you know, get drunk or do any of that stuff?
I don't get drunk anymore.
No.
Well, I have done in the past and I enjoyed it very much, but I guess I just played that one out and I don't feel the need to do it again. The yoga,
and even though you're pregnant, you probably wouldn't have got drunk anyway, would you? You wouldn't choose to get drunk.
No, I am having a baby this year, so that's exciting. I think, well, you have to look back over the history of yogis, and yogis were traditionally the rebels, the outcasts, the misfits, the freaks, the weirdos in society. They were not the conformists, you know. They were living outside society, observing society, but not part of it. And I guess in a way, that's those of us that are on that path, that there is a certain element to that, you know. I don't live a conventional lifestyle.
Mm-mm.
So
what about your child? Because you're going to have a child. Is that your child going to be a yogi? Is he or she going to like live in two places and do all this
I
stuff?
I guess, I don't know. It's really up to him. I just hope I can nurture him and support him too.
Is it a him?
It's a little boy.
Oh, yeah.
En route in the post. I suppose I just want him to be able to fill his own potential, or fill his own way of living.
And will you start his life like with one location, or will he live in two?
Well, he's been in the belly now for 7 months, and he's been in about 7 different countries. He's been on the yoga mat inside of me for the last pretty much 5-6 days a week since day one.
Yeah.
He'd take a couple of weeks off in the early stages when I was feeling a bit rough, but for the most part, he's already a bit of a yogi. So yeah, I don't know how that's all going to play out. I'm going to be a first-time mom, so it's all very new and exciting.
And do you think the yoga is going to help with the actual birth?
Oh my goodness! All I have noticed that is the 20 years I've been practicing is standing to me so well right now. Like, I feel so strong in the body. I have very few. I mean, it's a little bit uncomfortable at times, but for the most part, I feel pretty strong and healthy, and the body's in like pretty strong shape. So, and also, I don't have a lot of fear or trepidation about it. You know, I feel kind of relaxed about the whole thing, and I know all of that's I'm drawing on years and years of practice. So, yeah, and I've taught a lot of pregnant women over the years, which has been a really nice way of, you know, connecting with people who are going through that same pregnancy or same experience, and I'm still doing that. So yeah, I love having pregnant women in the room, especially if they're experienced yogis, because a lot of people come to yoga for the first time because they're pregnant to take care of themselves. There isn't really a lot yet in Dublin of classes where you can come to yoga if you're an experienced or a long-term practitioner and still take part. So
right.
I'm totally open to letting women like that come into class, and I can help them modify things and make it a little bit more safe and easy for them.
And what about the actual birth? Will you be choosing a natural type of birth, or will you be having the drugs?
I would like to have as natural, gentle birth as possible. So
yeah,
that's what I'm hoping for and aiming to create.
So not the drugs?
No drugs. No drugs. I think the whole thing will be an outer, inner cosmic experience to begin with, so I don't think I need drugs. I'd rather be there in the body and present, experiencing all of it as it's happening.
Is there a lot of choice, you know, for people who don't want to go into a hospital and have, you know, the usual thing? Is there much choice?
There seems to be a lot of choice here. It's like learning a new language for me. This is the first time I'm doing it, so there's probably people that could answer that question way better than I can right now. I can only answer it from my own experience, and it seems to be quite a lot of education here. I'm amazed. I come back to Ireland and I'm amazed at the amount of support, and you know, the healthcare here for pregnancy is really good, and there's a lot of support. And also, like in some countries like America, they get like 3 or 6 weeks maternity leave. Here people can take 6 months, which is, you know, great for mother and baby, that they can have that much time, you know, because it's a big adjustment to make.
Now, do you want to talk a little bit more about the healing, the cellular healing, because we've got a few more minutes? You could
sure share. Well, I like, one of the things I think that what I find has been I don't like to use this word, but I can't think of another one right now, missing, shall we say, from a lot of the yoga that's become quite commercial right now, is focusing on the aspect of personal healing and spiritual growth and personal development.
Yeah, and that's not really on the agenda for most.
It's not really on the agenda for most, because a lot of the teachers are new to it themselves. So unless you can't teach that or offer that to anybody, unless you've delved really deep into that yourself, it's just like, that's just how it is. So and I really, I suppose my ambition, if you want to use the word ambition, is to just keep bringing that in more and more to the yoga. That's the real tradition, that's the real roots of it, is to look at all our conditioning and our programming and our behavior patterns and everything that's keeping us from feeling how we're supposed to feel all the time when we're born to be happy. I mean, our true nature is joy and happiness and gratitude and excitement. And when we're not feeling that, we're always asking the question, why?
Yeah.
But there's such a whole host of reasons why. You know, we all grow up through a lot of disconnection. We've all had loss and grief to deal with and hardships and everything, and they impact us, you know, they shape our personalities, and they can either shape us and traumatize us, or they can either shape us and create great wisdom in ourselves if we look at that stuff consciously. So that's what I do in the healing work that I do, is I try to help people to look at that in a whole other way and transform whatever difficult experiences or traumas that they've had to them, and that those experiences shape them in a positive way and become their wisdom, become their strengths, rather than some sort of like scar or something difficult that they have to carry around like a big heavy burden. So
is it a therapy that involves a conversation?
It involves a conversation, sometimes one-on-one. I often work with couples because so much of the work is it relating to each other and how we relate to the world. Also do big groups. It involves a conversation. It involves making yourself vulnerable, mm-hmm. sharing what you're really feeling.
Yeah.
Most of us, I think all of us, we just want to be heard. We want to be understood and we want to be seen. And creating time for that, to make yourself heard, is just where the healing starts. And letting people know and reminding them that they are the creators of their own existence, that, you know, things just don't happen. You know, we're not a victim of circumstances. If there's something going on in your life that's difficult, you've got to look at what is your part to play in that. You know, what did you do to create this? It's happening to teach you something. So we can look at all of that sort of stuff, which is pretty exciting stuff, really.
And where can people find you if they want to come and try this?
I have a website,
yep.
called yogadeep.com. And I have most of my classes listed there. That's a way people can contact me. I also do some writings and pieces about my experiences, and that's all on that. So it's yogadeep.com, or you can email me at info@yogadeep.com. I teach in Bagot Street on a Tuesday and a Thursday night, both at 6:30.
Okay.
6:30 classes for open level, so beginners are welcome. Anybody's welcome to that. The Thursday classes for people that have a bit more experience. I also teach a meditation class on a Thursday right afterwards. And then I do some private. So I love doing private classes with people too, because you can really get into the nitty gritty. And yeah, and I do healing sessions as well. So
right.
Yeah, it's all on my website. Like, that's probably the easiest way. And if you want to hear a little bit more about, well, what is how you do that healing work, what's involved, I've written quite a few pieces on that. So it's in there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Victoria.
Thanks for being on the show and inspiring us all with your yoga lifestyle and your
holiday
lifestyle.
Yes.
And we'll be back with another interesting lifestyle, same time next week, on the Art of Living radio show.